Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Continuing our series, Minor Characters in a Major Story. Why don't I know anyone named Hur? So before we start, let's put out the challenge. Does anybody here know anybody named Hur? Anybody know Hur? Come on, Israelis have some pretty outlandish names. There are Nimrods.
That was Ben Hur.
Ben Hur, interesting.
It was a good movie.
Ben Hur. Really, no Hur, so it's not just me. It's pretty amazing that there's no Hurs, as we're going to see. Hur is our minor character from the parasha. Where does he show up in the parasha?
He was killed, so it's not a good name.
How do you know he was killed?
Huh?
How do you know he was killed?
It's a midrash. It doesn't say it so explicitly.
That's true. We're going to see that. It doesn't say it explicitly. Let's see. Okay. So where does Hur show up? So Hur shows up 2.5 times in the Torah.
He carries Moshe's arms. So
we'll get to the half later. It's probably 2¾ even. The two times he shows up in the flesh, so to speak, is in this week's parasha. Where is it? Well, we see that at the end of the parasha, when Bnei Yisrael go to war against Amalek, when Amalek comes to attack them, so Bnei Yisrael goes to war, and who's on the ground fighting? That's Yoshua. Yoshua is the general. Where's Moshe? Moshe Rabbeinu is not on the ground. He is up on a rock, up on a mountain. He's essentially praying, right? He's fighting the war with his arms. The Torah says, "Vayas Yoshua kasher amar lo Moshe lihlachem b'Amalek, Moshe Aaron v'Chur alu rosh hagivah." Moshe, Aaron, and Hur, they go up to the top of a hill. And what does it say? Vaya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael, kasher yaniach yado v'gavar Amalek. When Moshe picks up his hands, Israel is winning. When he puts them down, they're losing. As the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah says, what? Yidei Moshe osin v'shovros melchama, that it does or it wins or loses a war? No, it's the fact that Bnei Israel are looking upwards and having a munah. That's what's making them. That's what is making Moshe strong enough to hold up his hands, etc., etc. Not our topic today. V'day Moshe kvidim v'yikhu evan v'yasimu tachta v'yeshev v'aron v'chur tamchu b'yadav. And Aaron and Chur are supporting Moshe's hands, holding them up. Mizeh echad u'mizeh echad v'yihi yadav emunah ad bo hashamash. And he was holding his hands steady until the sun set. Okay, now. It's pretty amazing. We don't know anybody named Hur. You've got three people in the scene. One of them is named Moshe. One of them is named Aaron. And the third one is named Hur. What can we tell already off the bat about Hur as a person? Right away.
Impressive.
What was that, Marilyn?
He's quite important and impressive if he's
Moshe quite and important Aaron. And impressive. He's got to be, right? You've got three people up on a mountain. Moshe, Aaron, and then the third one is Hur. What's he doing there? We don't know, but it's got to be because he deserves to be there. It's important. You've got Moshe, Aaron, Hur, and Yoshua. He's got to be critical. In the text, who is Hur? Where does he come from? What family does he belong to? We don't know. Doesn't say, right? Doesn't say anything over here about who Hur is. Where'd he come from? We don't know. Okay, fine. Where does he show up next? Parashat Ki Tisa. Moshe goes up to Har Sinai to get the Luchot HaBrit. Vayakam Moshe v'yoshua mishartov v'yal Moshe al Har Elohim. Ela zekinim amar, shvu lanu bazeh ad asher nashuv aleichem v'hinei Aaron v'chur imachem mi bal dvarim yigash aleichem. Moshe goes up the mountain with Yoshua. And who does he leave in charge? Aaron, obviously. And Hur. Mm-hmm. Aaron and Hur. Who is this Hur? What's going on? How does everybody forget about Hur? Well, the answer is, how does everybody forget about Hur? Because that's it for Hur. He's done. He never shows up again. At least not in the flesh. We never see him ever again in the Torah. So why did I say he's mentioned 2.5 times? His name does come up. Where does it come up?
Bezalel.
Bezalel. Very good. Excellent. Where does it come up? Oh, I didn't put it over here. I put it later on. That's fine. We'll look at it right now, just to be complete, to show that David is correct. Hey, karati b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur, the Mate Yehuda. So we see that Bezalel. Who's Bezalel?
The grandson of Chur.
Okay, but who is he though? What's his job?
He was one of the artists building in the Mishkan.
The head one, our head architect and engineer of the Mishkan is Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. So he's the grandson of Chur. Can we presume over here that this is Chur?
Why not?
I think it's a safe assumption. It's a pretty safe assumption. We can't be absolutely certain, but it's a safe assumption that this is our Chur. So we learned a few things about Chur right now. What did we learn for sure?
Mate Yehuda.
We know for sure that he's from Shevet Yehuda. That's good. We know for sure that he's from Shevet Yehuda. We also know that he has his prestigious grandson, Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. Okay. That's what we know about Chur. So we know that Chur is important because he's with Aaron and Moshe on the Giv'ah. And he is one of the people put in charge of Am Yisrael and Moshe. He's basically, I don't know, he's the Speaker of the House. Yeah? If Moshe is the president and Aaron is the vice president, then he's the Speaker of the House. I haven't been in America in a while, but I think that's how it goes. He's the next one in line. Right? I think so. Anyways, so the question is, who was Chur? That's American politics. Who was Chur? So when you want to find out about somebody in terms of the genealogy, somebody's writing to me in chat to probably correct me. Chief Whip. Okay, fine. So who is
the Speaker of the House?
What was that?
Rosh Memshalah Chalufi.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. So in America, if the president gets assassinated, so the vice president takes over. And then if the vice president gets assassinated, then somebody else takes over. I think it's the Speaker of the House, but I'm not sure.
Speaker of the House. Yes, yeah. Speaker of the House.
That's very good. Yeah.
First class of general is 10.
What?
No.
Or it's the designated survivor if something happens in a TV show. when you want to find out who somebody is genealogically, so the best place to look really is Divrei Yamim. Okay? So let's do a little bit of that. But before we get to Divrei Yamim, first let's look at Rashi. Okay? Rashi gets introduced in our parasha. Sorry, Chur gets introduced in our parasha. And Rashi says, who is he? And here we find out Chur Bena Shel Miriam Haya. Chur is the son of Miriam.
Yeah.
Okay. V'aviv Kalev bin Yefuneh.
Whoa.
Power couple. Okay. Power couple. You thought Aaron and Elisha and Nadav were impressive. Look at this. This is Miriam and Kalev bin Yefuneh. Amazing. Shneamar. Rashi quotes the Divrei Yamim, Vayikach lo Kalev et Ephrat, Vatelad lo et Chur. Now, that's not going to really help us, except at the end of Rashi. Ephrat, zu Miriam, Kedita Besota. Okay, we're going to see that later, but basically Rashi quotes this Pasuk. This Pasuk says, Kalev, son of Chetzron, keep that in mind, had children by his wife Azuba and by Yeriot. These were her sons, Yesher, Shobav, Ardon, and when Azuva died, so this Kalev ben Chetzron had a first wife named Azuva, and when she died, he married Ephrat, who bore him Chur. Chur begat Uri, and Uri begat Bezalel. Right? This is Chur, who had Uri, who had Bezalel. It's Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur, who is apparently ben Kalev Ephrat. That was his name. Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur ben Kalev Ephrat. Okay? So now...
We also learn here that Chetzron is Yefuneh, because here it's Kalev ben Chetzron.
Well, do we? That's kind of part of the issue over here, right? This is one of these classic... Wait a second, who is this? A different name over here, a different name over there. So let's do some work. Okay? Let's ignore this pasuk for a second. Let's take a look at the Gemara in Sota. So this is the Gemara in Sota. Gemara says, and it came to pass because the midwives feared God that he made them houses. Okay, this is the Mialdot, right? We've learned about the Mialdot before when we talk about Elisheva bat Aminadav. Who were the midwives, Shifra and Puah, according to tradition?
Miriam and, not Miriam, Yochevet and, what's
Go
her
ahead.
name? I can't remember her name. It's just gone out of my mind.
Well, no. Well, Yocheved is for sure. Yocheved is one of them. But then there are two options. And, it's either Miriam.
And Miriam. But Miriam was Elisheva too little. Minadav. So it was, yeah.
Yeah. So it's either Miriam or Elisheva Bat Minadav. Mm-hmm. So last time we learned about Elisheva Bat Minadav. But by far the more popular approach is that it's Miriam. So it's a mother-daughter team, which would have put Miriam at the age of 5 at the time. But okay. No. They put their kids to work early. So these midwives feared God, and he made them houses. According to the Gemara, he made them houses refers to Hashem. Vayaslam batim. In the pasuk, it's not clear whether Paro is making the houses or Hashem is making the houses. But the Gemara is definitely assuming that it's Hashem. What happens? So it says that Hashem made houses for Miriam or Elisheva batim Nadav, meaning that their descendants would be very prestigious. They would have houses. Now, what does that mean? So one says they are priestly and Levitical houses. Aaron and Moses, and one says they are the royal houses, meaning Yocheved and Elisheva Bat Aminadav have Aaron and Moshe, and one says they are the royal houses, for also David descended from Miriam. Meaning, if you assume that it's Miriam, so then the house that was made for Miriam is the house of David, because Miriam descends from the union of Miriam and, as we're going to see, Kalev, eventually leading to David. As it is written, and Azuba died, and Kalev took unto him Ephrath, which by him Chor, and it is written, now David was the son of that Ephratite. David was Ben Ephrati. So the Gemara wants to say that Ephrati is Ephrat herself. And Kalev, the son of Chetzron, begat children of Azuba, his wife, and of Yeriot. The Gemara asked the question that Martin asks. The son of Chetzron, he was the son of Yefuneh. What? Kalev ben Chetzron, is Kalev ben Yefuneh? That's what he's called in the Chumash. Ah, the Gemara says it was a nickname. It means that he was a son who turned Pana from the council of the spies. In other words, Yefuneh was a nickname. Okay? Yefuneh was a nickname and his real name was Chetzron. This gets tricky. And it gets tricky because what was Miriam's real name? Presumably, Miriam's real name was Miriam. I don't know. That's just what I suspect. And the Gemara also assumes that Ephrat was a nickname. It was Ephrat because of the Lashon of Pru Urvu. She's the one who led to a lot of Pru Urvu, probably a reference to the fact that she encouraged Amram to remarry Yocheved, which led to everybody else to also remarry their wives after they had divorced them. And so Ephrat is actually the nickname. So what I'm not clear about, and I don't know if anybody's ever done a study of this, I think it would be an interesting study. Martin, maybe some work for you. Do we find more nicknames in Divrei Hayamim or real names? I remember we've discussed this before. We keep going back to this, really, because with minor characters, names are important. When Esav marries his wives, so Rashi says he really only ever had 3 wives. And while we find that the wives have different names in different places, so actually Rashi actually is pretty consistent that in one place, all 3 names are the real names. And in the other place, all 3 names are the nicknames. So I'd be interested to know whether or not we find more nicknames or more real names in Divrei Hayamim. I would have expected more real names in Divrei Hayamim, just me. Mm-hmm. It seems like more of a chronicle. You know, it's supposed to be a real
accurate
story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, an accurate story, but who knows? Anyways, this is the Gemara in Sota that Rashi referred to, and that basically explains away the names in Divrei Hayamim and says, the Kalev over there is our Kalev, who's married to, even though it says Kalev ben Chetzron, it's really Kalev ben Yefuneh, or Kalev ben Yefuneh is really a Kalev ben Chetzron. And Ephrat over there is Bichlal, not Ephrat, it's Miriam. Ephrat is just a nickname. Okay, so you have Kalev and Miriam, they marry, they have Chur. Just to round out the picture here, basically what you've got in terms of the son, the kids of Amram, you've got the Bechor is Aharon, who's married to Elisheva Bat Aminadav, who is the sister of a Nasi, right? Of Shevet Yehuda, now that we think about it. And then you have Miriam married to, hold on one second. Yeah, married to Kalev, who is not a Nasi, but also another big man from Shevet Yehuda. It turns out he's a Meragel, right? The Meraglim were not Nasi, they were Meraglim.
But he is not mentioned in the ancestry of David at the end of Ruth.
Yeah, that's true. Does he have to be? You're saying he was important. He should have been mentioned.
If we have the whole list from Peretz down to Boaz.
I see what you're saying. Hmm. Let's see. So what's the whole list? Let me think. What's the whole genealogy there? Between Peretz to David. It could be that it's on his mother's side, on one of the mother's sides. It could be. It's possible. I think someone says that, because it says David was the son of the Ephrati. Okay, we'll look at it afterwards, Penchas. It's a good question. It's a good question on the Gemara and Sota. Fine. Okay. Actually, it may be that the Maharsha deals with that. I can't remember. The truth is, I looked at this Maharsha that we're about to see right now pretty late last night. So I'm not sure how much of it I totally got. So we're going to have to get it together right now. Okay? So let's do a little bit of interactive learning. So the Maharsha, there's two comments from the Maharsha. I obviously put it on here because I thought it was important. It says, V'kamar, the David mimiryam kati. Okay, so the Gemara says that David, good, right away dealing with what Pinchas said, David comes from Miriam. Dichtiv v'tamat azuva she'azvua b'chorei Yisrael milisa ota. I remember this. So the Gemara says that she's also called azuva. Now, what does that mean? So we saw that in the pasuk here in Divrei Yamim, it actually says that Azuva died, right? V'tamat azuva, and then Kalev marries Ephrat. So the Gemara assumes that this azuva actually didn't die, and in fact, azuva is Miriam herself. But what happened? She was barren and she got sarat. Now I have a real problem with this because she got sarat much later. But okay, let's leave that alone for a second. And apparently she was nobody was interested in going out with Miriam. Pretty amazing. Kalev married her. So here the Gemara is assuming, the Maharsha is quoting that she's called Ephrat because she was healed. It's milashon refuah. V'al shma nikra David Ephrati. Metzinu lashon Ephrati b'anshe Ephraim. V'yamru lo anshe Gilad Ephrati ata v'gam hadar sham v'Ephraim. Okay, here he's just pointing out that it's also mentioned by Ephraim. Aval David shayam Yehuda v'dar b'beit lechem Yehuda v'day d'lo yanikra ken b'shem Ephrati ela al shem em hamishpacha. He was definitely called. I see. Okay, good. Pinchas, here's your answer. David does not actually come from Miriam. It's just that Miriam was considered the mother of Mishpachat Yehuda. Sheita chashuva, dahainu Miriam. There you go. Pinchas, you were right. He doesn't come from Kalev and Miriam, but rather just Miriam is identified as a matriarch of Shevet Yehuda. She nikret bekra Ephrat. They were called Ephratim. Apparently, after Miriam, all of Shevet Yehuda was called Ephrat. Okay, so what about that? The fact that it sounds like David came from them.
Miriam ben Chetzron. That's also the end of Ruth.
Is that Ram? Ram ben
Chetzron. That's Ram. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the end of Ruth. That's where you see that.
Good. There you go. Ram ben Chetzron Sefer Ruth. The David HaMelech. Is that what that says? The
Divrei Yamim. Divrei Yamim.
Okay. Sefer Ruth with Divrei Yamim. Umitoch Aktuvim near the Kalev Lav Hainu Ram. It doesn't seem like Kalev. We're not going to give him another name of Ram. Because Chetzron himself had three sons, Yerachmiel, Ram, and Kluv, and Ram has his own name. Dahainu Kalev, Kluv is Kalev. That's what he's assuming. Kedemuchi Krai, the Divrei Yamin. This is a question. Yeshliya Shev, Dechad Miyotze Bnei Ram, Nasa Isha Miyotze Bnei Kalev. So that's So basically, on a mother's side, one of Kalev's daughters or granddaughters or whatever married Ram, and that's how he got in. There you go. This is what I was remembering. See, I told you I remembered seeing it, so I saw it late last night. Good. So David is called Ephrati because Miriam is considered the matriarch of the family, but also because if you go up his tree, you'll find that on the mother's side, at some point, it goes back to Miriam and Caleb. Okay. Okay, let's go past this because we don't have all night. The Maharal over here makes an important point. So let's go back to this. So what's Chur doing there? What's Chur doing holding up Moshe's hand? What's he doing being put in charge? So the Maharal answers, well, that's it. Chur b'nashel Miriam haya. The Gur Aryeh here is commenting on Rashi's words. Dim lokein lama Chur v'lo Nadav Aviyu. You would expect somebody else would be there with Aaron, Nadav and Aviyu. Those are his kids. Ela mipnei shehu bna shel Miriam, ubizchut Moshe v'Aaron u'Miriam inatzchu ha'oyev kehem shlosha ro'ei Yisrael. So the reason that Chur is there is because of his mother. Miriam's zchut is that which is going to save Bnei Yisrael. They're the triumvirate that are protecting Am Yisrael in the Midbar. We know that the Gemara says that it's in their merit that we have three miracles, right? The Ananiah Kavod, the Bear of Miriam, and the Man. So it makes sense that they should be the three people that are most important. So Chur is there in lieu of Miriam. Why is Miriam not there herself? I can't answer. I think it's a stronger question to ask why Kalev is not there, but maybe because he's not genetically from Miriam. Maybe Chur is there because he's from the blood. Okay. By the way, I wanted to mention, the Maharal points this out. This is just a reference to a different halakha. You know what we learned from this, from Moshe, Aaron, and Chur being there. We all know what we learned from this. Be'ezrat Hashem, we should go back to doing this in shul, right? We've gone away from it a little bit during Corona times, but it's really best to have three people standing at the bima at all times, a minimum of three. You have the reader, you have the gabbai, and you have the person getting the aliyah. They're supposed to all be there by the Torah. You're supposed to have at least three people, just like Moshe and Aaron and Chur. Okay. Now, before we get to the extended story of Chur himself, I just want to go back over this issue of who he was, because there are some issues here in terms of identifying Chur as being the son of Miriam and Kalev. Okay? Rashi brings up one of the issues. Rashi doesn't think it's a problem, but it is kind of strange. If you follow the dotted line in terms of how this works out, so Rashi points out, Tzei b'chashov shekol achad meyam haya pachot min shmona shanim kishaholido. In the family that would eventually lead to Chur and Bezalel, et cetera, all the men were 8 when they had their son. Okay? Why? Shehare. Kalev haya ben 40 shana ben meraglim. Kalev himself was 40 when the meraglim were sent. Dechtiv ben 40 shana anochi b'shiloch. Okay? Kalev himself says, I was 40 when they sent me. Votasha. And at that point, everybody was already born. How do we know everybody was already born? Now, when I say everybody, who do I mean? I mean
Bezalel.
I mean Chur, Uri, and Bezalel. How do I know that? Because the Mishkan was already built. Shaihu Kama Mishkan. Shasa Bezalel. That was already in the first year, at the end of the first year in the Midbar. They already have a Mishkan. Bezalel was already around designing a Mishkan. Okay, so how does this work out? So Kalev aya ben shmone kishaholid azuva isha uben tet kisholid yiriot v'achar mitat azuva ishto lakachet efrat v'olida et Chur shana acheret arei ben eser shanim. So they want to say that when Kalev had Chur himself, Kalev was 10. Kalev would be 10 when he had Chur. V'chur ben shmone kisholid et Uri. Chur would have been 8 when he had Uri, so that takes you to 18 years. Okay? Why am I counting 18 years? Whatever, let's just keep going. So Chur was 8 when he had Uri. V'uri ben shmonek jolid Bezalel. He was 8 when he had Bezalel. Harei kaf vav shanim. That's going to be 26 years. וכתיב את כל איש חכם לב, ואין איש מפחות מירגים לשנה. All the people who worked on the Mishkan had to be at least 13 years old. הרי בצהל בשעה שעשה המשכן, בן יוד חד שנה. I'm not sure why it says יוד חד שנה. I think it's supposed to be יוד גימל. I think this is a typo over here, because the Gemara itself actually says he was יוד גימל שנה. הרי מם שנה חסר אחת. That actually comes out to 39, if you do 13. I don't know why the Bar Ilan had 18 over there. So, Bezalel himself was 13 when he built the Mishkan. That's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. But nimtza shekol achad mehem haya pachot min shmona, kesholido. V'chein mefurash beperek mitzvah amoreh. Pretty amazing, right? So,
there's not a problem. Well, it's not a problem. I mean, it's just weird. I mean,
it's weird, yeah.
Miriam would have been at least 88.
Right, no, so it gets even worse than that, Rabbi, right? Because now I'm going to show you the problem in the exact opposite direction, and that's what the Radak points out. The Radak says, Yesh me'ar botenu shan mu'kiu kalev ben yifuneh. V'lam nek reshmo ben yifuneh shepanam yatzat meraglim. U'ma shamar gam ken otniel ben knas achi kalev, that's why we skipped over before. Amru ki achi v'yameim. Okay, we'll skip this part, it's not so relevant right now. But he says, V'lo yireh ken lefi pshat ha-pshutim. Ki lefi pshat ha-pshutim nira ki kalev zeh ayamim nei chetzron ha-rishonim. He wants to say that this Chetzron is the original Chetzron, who's you know much much older. V'im kemo shamir abatenu ki haya kalev ben yifune kishalid Chetzron kalev haya Chetzron ben mea b'shivim shana. Chetzron would have had to be 170 when he had Kalev, okay? Because Kalev was, as we said, he was 10 at the time of around. No, he was 40 when they left the Midbar, when they left the Mitzrayim, and Chetzron is from the Rishonim, right? Chetzron is much older. V'zayah b'shana shniya she'atzu mi'mitzrayim. Chetzron haya mi'ba'e Mitzrayim. Chetzron was one of the people who came down to Mitzrayim. And how, that's crazy, right? They were there for 210 years. He would have to be 170 when he had Kalev ben Yifuneh. That's crazy. So the Radak doesn't like that. So he thinks that it doesn't sound like he thinks that Kalev is really Kalev ben Yifuneh. The Ibn Ezra also doesn't like it for a different reason. First of all, he doesn't like Bezalel being 13 at all. And he also says, wait a second. Chetzron is Ben Peretz. Right? This is what we mean when we say that he's one of the Rishonim. Chetzron is basically Yehuda's grandson. Chetzron ben Peretz halid banim Kluvi v'Yerachmeel. V'zeh Kluvi yikari Kalev v'chein katuv v'chalev ben Chetzron. V'od v'kalev achi Yerachmeel. We know that Kalev, that's who it's talking about. So he says, this is l'hafrish ben Kalev ben Chetzron u'ben Kalev ben Yifuneh b'avur heyot shneem yishevet echad. So the Ibn Ezra thinks that they were totally different people. Kalev ben Yifuneh and Kalev ben Chetzron, they're not the same person. The Rabbah agrees with him. So you see that there is a strain amongst the Rishonei, the Rishonim who usually learn according to the Pshat, to not accept this idea. So it's not well accepted. The Shaddal himself mentions that there's even another theory. In Josephus, it says that Chur was actually Miriam's wife, a husband. So that's a totally different story. So we got basically three options here. One, the classic traditional option, is to say that Chur was Miriam's son and Miriam was married to Kalev ben Yifuneh. The other option is to say that Chur is somebody totally different. Chur is the son of someone named Kalev, but it's Kalev ben Chetzron. Somebody totally different. Okay? And the third option is to say that Chur is Miriam's husband himself. Okay, fine. Now the question is, what happened to Chur? Obviously, all of Chazal is going to assume the first option, that Chur was the son of Miriam. So what happened to Chur? We said that Chur was holding Moshe's arms. He is at the foot of the mountain of Har Sinai, in charge of Bnei Yisrael along with Aharon. Why does he disappear? So the Midrash tells the story in the following way. The people saw that Moshe was late. The sages say that the Satan took advantage of the opportunity, and when Moshe was suspended between heaven and earth, he showed them an image of Moshe appearing to be dead. Right? The Midrash describes how the Satan played this hologram of what was going on at Har Sinai for all of Bnei Israel to see on day 40, what they thought was day 40, and they saw Moshe being carried on a funeral bier, and they thought he was dead. And that's why they did what they did. They decided they wanted to build an Egel HaZahav. What did Chur do at that moment? Chur arose and rebuked them. You brainless fools. Kitziei tzavarei. Right? It was more like mindless. Or cut off necks, I think. Anyways, you brainless fools. Have you forgotten the miracles God performed for you? And what happened? That didn't go over too well. They rose up against him and they killed him. Then they came to Aaron. Aaron saw the score. And he said to him, we'll do what you have done to this man, and Aaron caved. Now the Midrash doesn't get into why Aaron caved. It just says that he does. But the Gemara makes it a little bit clearer. The Gemara actually quotes a pasuk, Vayar Aaron, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav. Quite a simple pasuk. Aaron saw, and he built a Mizbeach. Okay? But let me ask a question. What did he see? Right? Rabbi, I see this bothers you too. What did he see? So the Gemara says, Mara, Amar Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yafet, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ra'a Chur Shezavuach Lefanav. Do you see what they did there? Anybody see what they did?
They connected the Mizbeach to the...
Yeah. Exactly, right? This is classic. This is like... Atikru Banayach Alabonayach. A little bit less, but it's, you know, they saw that there was a problem in the Pasuk, Vayara Aaron, what did he see? They solved the problem, and then they poetically inserted the solution to the problem back into the Pasuk. Ra'achur Shazavuach Lefanav is a play in the words, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav. Mizbeach becomes Zavuach. Amar Ilo Shamanalu, but Aaron now gives you Aaron's calculation. Ilo Shamanalu, if I don't listen to them, Hashta Avduli Kedavdu Bechur. They're going to do to me what they did to Chur. Now, is Aaron being selfish over here? So the Gemara assumes, no, he's not being selfish. What's the problem? Umakayim bi im yarog b'mikdash Hashem kohen v'navi. V'lo havi lo takanta la'ola. With that, they will have fulfilled the Pasuk in Eicha that if you kill a priest and a prophet, I am the Kohen, and I'm a Navi. You kill me, there's never going to be any solution for that. Mutav de liavdu le'egel, ef shahavi l'utakanta b'tshu. Aaron did triage. He says, it's better that I be involved and allow them to do idolatry than that they kill a Kohen Navi. Who can tell me when did they kill a Kohen Navi?
Zechariah,
right, that's exactly right. Zechariah was killed after, you know, giving over some prophecies that the people didn't like so much, and he was also the Kohen, Ben Gadol. But it wasn't just that he was a Kohen and just that he was a Navi. What else was wrong? If I remember correctly, it was Yom Kippur, and I think it was Shabbos even, I think. Right? It was one of those cases where they kept piling on. And what did it lead to, Martin? What happened because of it, according to the piyut? This is one of the piyut of Marina and Tisha B'Av. It talks about how Nebuchadnezzar, you know,
Nebuchadnezzar,
the blood was boiling and it kept boiling and it wouldn't stop boiling. And no matter how many people he killed, he was killing babies and everything. And it wouldn't stop boiling until they told him what he did. And he said, I'm going to kill everybody. And then finally it stopped boiling. But it was boiling because of what they did to Zechariah. So you see how bad it could be. So this is why Aaron did what he did. And this is what happened to Chur. This is why Chur never shows up again. Because Chur's dead. He was killed. The rabbis saw Chur is this really important person. And all of a sudden he disappears. Something must have happened. And they say, well, where's the last place we saw him? We saw him at the base of the mountain, right before Chet HaEgel. That's where he died. Now, what do we get out of this? So I want to take it one step further, and I want to talk about what kind of person the rabbis make Chur out to be, and what the significance of that is. So describe to me who Chur is, based on what we know. Tell me, who's Hur? What kind of person?
We know he's Shevet Yehuda.
Okay.
He's possibly the son of Miriam.
Right.
He held up Moses' arms when they were fighting Amalek.
He's a symbol.
He's a symbol of what?
He's a hero.
He's a hero. He's a symbol of the three Bani Gay Israel for Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
Right. And what kind of person is he?
Zealot. He's a zealot.
He's a zealot. What do you mean a zealot? Why a zealot?
He's a martyr more than anything.
He's a foil to Aaron. The balance to Aaron, because Aaron placates the people, possibly too much, but he placates the people, he calms them down and agrees to do something which was a grave sin, but kept things going, whereas Hur did the opposite. He reacted zealously, I guess, yeah, like a zealot, like Pinchas almost, and it didn't work this time. And so he's like a, and also he holds one side of Moshe's arm, Aaron holds the other side of Moshe's arm. He's a counterbalance to Aaron.
Interesting. Yes. Okay.
I always thought that he's like a team player.
Hur?
Yeah.
Why? What makes
him? He's taking one to the team.
Ah. Yeah. He's in the group. He's helping them. The leaders. He's like.
I see. You're saying his relationship with Moshe and Aaron, not with Bnei Israel.
Right. Yeah. With Moshe and Aaron.
He doesn't seem to have much patience for Bnei Israel.
No.
Yeah. No, he's steadfast, right? He's a rock. He doesn't bend. He says, no, you can't do it. You guys are being fools. And he tries to stand up to them.
But it's almost as if he's drawing attention away from Aaron to himself.
You think he should have stayed quiet and let Aaron handle it?
No, I think it was deliberate. Hmm. That better I than Aaron take the brunt of the people's anger.
Interesting.
He was Aaron's nephew, right? I mean, so maybe in a sense he was out of line because he was younger than Aaron.
Okay. Naban David said he's almost royalty, but not quite. Okay. So, a couple of things. Number one, just to show you how far it went. So the rabbis pointed out that, well, once we say all this, and I want to actually relate to some of the things that you guys pointed out, but once we say this, some other things come into focus, right? Bezalel is the grandson of Hur, right? Mm. Now, if we say that Hur was killed, basically trying to prevent Chet HaEgel, isn't it poetic justice then that Bezalel is the one to help build the Mishkan? And I'm not the only one to say this. The Midrash says it. Why is Hur mentioned here? It's interesting, by the way, Bezalel never gets himself. Actually, I don't want to say never, but he is repeatedly described as Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. That's his name. He's not Bezalel. His name is Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. Okay? Why is Hur mentioned here? And he's mentioned all the time. Because when Israel is about to serve idols, he jeopardizes his life on God's behalf and would not allow them to do so, with the result that they slew him. Whereupon Hashem said, I assure you that I will repay you for this. In other words, Bezalel is the redemption of Hur. Hur tried to prevent the Chet HaEgel. The Mishkan is in some way, a response to the Chet HaEgel. And so Hur's name gets put in there. The Chizkuni says, the grandfather of Bezalel is mentioned, even though Aholiyav ben Achisamach's grandfather is not mentioned. Aholiyav is the right-hand man of Bezalel. And he's just Aholiyav ben Achisamach, because he was killed in connection with the sin of the golden calf, and his construction of the Mishkan came to atone for that sin. Therefore, Hur is mentioned in association with it. So that's why Hur finds his way in there. The Malbim notices the symbology of what I forget who pointed out about the one is on the right hand, and one is on one hand, and one is on the other of Moshe. The isko shel Aaron haya la'acher agudat Yisrael. So he wants to say that Aaron's job was la'acher agudat Yisrael. Moshe katuv chazal she'a ohev shalom ve'odev shalom. V'chur masar nafsho l'mita ve'et ha'egel ba'ad achdut Hashem. Who's Chur defending? Chur is defending God, right? Chur is trying to prevent idolatry, and Aaron, in the calculus of his head, who does he put first, Hashem or Bnei Israel? Let's be frank.
Aaron puts Bnei Israel
first. Aaron puts Bnei Israel first. Aaron says, does the math and says, either I allow idolatry and save Bnei Israel from a sin that basically they will never come back from, or I allow them to kill me and say I'm not going to be involved in idolatry. And then they're gone forever. But at least I've defended God's honor. So, okay, Moshe hay abriach etichon neged shimcha echad. Moshe was in the middle. Kihu igil shem Hashem hagadol. Va'aron v'chur tamchu biyadav mizeh echad achdut Hashem mizeh ata echad ve'achdut Yisrael mizeh u'mikamcha Yisrael goy echad. In other words, you had Aaron on one side, Chur on the other. Aaron was poleman Yisrael, and Chur is poleman Hashem, and Moshe is in the middle because he does both. He has the capacity, as we're going to see in a second, he has the capacity to do both at the same time. And maybe that's a little bit of the problem. And here's an interesting perspective on leadership. I found this on Chabad.com. There's a lot of good stuff over there. There's a Rabbi Shalom Kesselbaum. He puts it nicely. He says, the ultimate leader must embody two opposite dynamics. I don't know what happened here. This must be my fault. On one hand, he must care deeply for his people, love them, and have only their best interests in mind. And he must find a way to communicate his love, devotion, and care so that the people know their leader feels this way about them. On the other hand, a leader needs to display strength and boldness. He must communicate to his people what is right and what is wrong and stand firmly for what is true and correct. Aaron and Hur each excelled in one of these qualities. Right? Hur, like his father Kalev, was the bold and courageous leader who stood strongly for what was right. The problem was, let me flesh that out for a second. There's something that we didn't touch upon yet. If we say that Hur is the son of Miriam and Kalev, what kind of characteristics can we attribute to Miriam and Kalev? Whose DNA does Hur have?
Outspoken.
Who's outspoken?
People who speak their minds.
And Kalev.
Right, both of them. When is Kalev outspoken?
You're the Ramaraglan.
Vayahas Kalev El Ha'am. Even more than Yeshua, he is able to stand up and tell the people, "Alo na'aleh, we're going to go up. This is ridiculous. You guys don't know what happened. I know what happened. This is wrong. Hashem gave us this land. We need to go." Now, is he successful, Kalev?
No,
he's not successful. But he does it anyways. Who does that sound like? Sounds like Hur. Now, Miriam, when is Miriam outspoken? When does Miriam act like
first
this?
First of all, with her father.
According to the Midrash, with her father, right? She stands up to Amram and tells him what to do.
Also with Bat Paro.
Also with Bat Paro. Yeah.
To go over to her.
Right.
Then also with Sipora.
Yeah, and she speaks her mind over there, not successfully and not correctly, but yeah, she does speak her mind over there.
And according to Rashi, that says Shifra and Pua.
That's right.
Herod and Miriam, they both spoke up and
they stand up to.
Were very brazen to speak up to Paro.
That's right. It's in his DNA, right? What does it say about Miriam? She gets one verb at the beginning over there, vatetatzav, right? She stands fast. By the reeds, right? Milashon Yatziv or Nitzavim. She will not move. She will not move. She's standing fast. So you've got Miriam and Kalev, and then they naturally have a child named Hur, who absolutely is going to stand up to Bnei Israel even on pain of death. Okay? But he's not the kind of person, perhaps, to, you know, cradle and sweet talk the people. It's not the kind of person he is. Hur, like his father Kalev, was the bold and courageous leader who stood strongly for what was right. The problem was that the Jews didn't feel his love and devotion. He came across too critical and harsh, which produced the opposite effect he was trying to achieve. With Aaron, the Jews felt understood, they felt loved and cared for, etc., etc. Problem was, he was too kind. The people took advantage of this. It's perhaps this reason that Moshe appointed both of them to lead together. He knew of their individual strengths. And if they would have tempered each other's reactions and responded to the sin as one, perhaps they could have stopped it. See, I think what he's trying to say is, you know, naturally you need to have one leader. You need to have one leader to embody all these qualities. But that's very difficult. It's very difficult to have one leader who embodies all the qualities. So second best is to have two leaders. But the trick with two leaders is that they have to work together. You can't have one leader just acting like he is, and then the other leader acting like he is all the time. Because then people know, you know, it's like having a mother and a father who have completely different, you know, approaches. The child knows that when they want something, they go to the one who's more lenient. And then the child knows that when they want something taken care of, they go to the one who's more authoritative. No, you gotta have them work together. They have to work as one. And that's much more difficult from the leader's perspective, but it's going to be much more successful. And so that tells us about Chur. And I think that there's a lesson over there in terms of both in terms of leadership, but also in terms of the kind of character that Chur was. There is a remes that I didn't have time to follow up on this. I was listening to a shir before. So there is another place in Tanakh where you have the word Chur show up. It's not a name. But that's by Chur Karpaso Tchelet. I have to say, I'm just saying this al regalachat. I didn't get a chance to look into the sources. I was listening to a shir, but the person who was giving the shir, so he was suggesting that Esther herself, she dresses also in these colors. And the idea over here is that we know, what is this? This is from Perek Aleph, actually. I'm sorry. This is from Perek Aleph. What happens in Perek Aleph? That's where the party is taking place. Now, this party, according to the Midrash, one of the most salient aspects of the party was that what was Ahasuerus doing? What was he using at the party?
The Kalim from the Beit HaMikdash,
right? If he's using the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, then isn't it interesting that Chur is right in there, right? It's the character of Chur who shows up. And maybe, at least at the beginning, there's a lack of Chur-ness, right? The Jewish people are kind of passive a little bit at the beginning. They're willing to go along with what the king is doing, even though he's actually using the kingdom of the Beit HaMikdash. There's a lack of Chur. And that's Esther's job to fix, right? Esther, her role, her job, her redemption is when she does stand up for the people, when she stands up for what's right. But she doesn't lay back and say, okay, well, I'm the queen and I'm going to be taken care of. But she listens to Moshe to Mordechai's Musar when he says, this is what you're here for. And she stands up and she does the right thing and redeems the Jewish people through that quality that Chur had, where she is willing to put her life on the line for what's right.
Chur is also separated from the others by the Pesach.
Uh-huh. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Very good. He would notice that.
Okay, so what did we see here? We saw that Chur shows up really in person only twice in Chumash. Once when he holds up Aaron and Moshe's, when he and Aaron hold up Moshe's hands, that's in this week's parasha by Amalek. And then once when he is appointed as second in command along with Aaron when Moshe goes up the mountain. We try to identify Chur himself because we don't have any record in Chumash about who he is. He's either Miriam's son, Miriam married to Kalev, or he's Stam, a Kalev's son, but a totally different Kalev, Kalev ben Chetzron. Or he is Miriam's husband himself. That's what it says in Josephus, just to know. And then we saw what happened to Chur. So what happened to Chur was that he was killed, according to the Midrash, when he tried to prevent Chet HaEgel, when he stood up to the Jewish people. And that led to Aaron actually doing the Egel HaZav because he didn't want to meet the same fate. But later on finds his redemption when Bezalel himself, the grandson of Chur, builds the Mishkan, thereby redeeming the Chet HaEgel. And the Malbim points out that Chur's quality of defending God's honor is what puts him next to Moshe, because he's the flip side of Aharon, on the other side of Moshe. And perhaps that's what Moshe had in mind when he put Aharon and Chur in charge. He said, you know, I'm going to be upstairs, so I need to split myself in two and put you downstairs. The problem was they didn't work together. They just worked kind of unilaterally, each one doing whatever he thought. And then finally we saw Al-Tzad HaRemez later on in Sefer Esther, when Chur shows up, it might be a reference to the Kelei Mishkan and how Esther uses the Midah of Chur in order to save the Jewish people. All right. Yishachach kukulam. Thank you all for coming.
Yishachach. And referring back to the title of this, referring back to